Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Ancestral whispers echoed through the canyon as Nanyehi crouched behind the weathered rock formation, her breath shallow and controlled. The night concealed her slender figure draped in modern hiking gear that belied her connection to the ancient lands beneath her feet. At 28, she had spent most of her adult life running, not from danger, but from destiny. The full moon illuminated the Arizona landscape, casting silver light across the red rock formations. Nanyehi closed her eyes, feeling the familiar pull in her blood, the sensation of something wild clawing beneath her skin. She had suppressed the shift for weeks now, each day growing more painful than the last. You can't outrun what flows.
In your veins, little wolf, a deep voice resonated behind her. Nanyehi whipped around, amber eyes flashing in the darkness.
I'm not running, Apeniman. I'm choosing. The elderly man stepped forward, his weathered face mapped with lines of wisdom earned through 9 decades of shifting between human and wolf. His silver hair was braided tight against his scalp, adorned with beads that symbolized his status among the Canyon clan. The council convenes tomorrow. Joaquinian has invoked the ancient rites. He claims you as his own. Apeniman's voice carried no judgment, only concern. And I reject his claim, Nanyehi replied, her words sharp as flint. I won't be bound to a man who sees me as property, mate bond or not. Apeniman settled beside her, his movements deliberate despite his age. The old ways were created when our people needed protection, she interrupted. Times have changed, and so must we. The elder studied her face, noticing the stubborn set of her jaw that reminded him so much of her grandmother, his sister who had defied the council decades ago. Your resistance has consequences. Joaquinian grows more determined with each passing moon. His influence spreads. Let it spread, Nanyehi muttered, tucking a strand of dark hair behind her ear. I'd rather die free than live caged. A twig snapped in the distance, causing both to freeze. Nanyehi inhaled deeply, catching the familiar scent that had haunted her dreams. Cedar, sage, and something primal, distinctly male. He's here, she whispered, muscles tensing. Apeniman gripped her arm. You cannot avoid this confrontation forever. The council respects tradition, but I've been working to sway them. Some believe the mate bond should be a choice, not a mandate. And the others? They fear change as they fear winter without shelter. The old man's eyes reflected moonlight. You should return to the city tonight. I will delay him. Nanyehi squeezed his hand in gratitude. The city won't protect me for long. He found me in Seattle, then Denver. Phoenix is just another temporary refuge. Then perhaps it's time. You stopped hiding and started fighting, not with claws and fangs, but with our laws and traditions. Challenge him before the council. The distant sound of footsteps grew closer, accompanied by a low, rumbling growl that seemed to vibrate through the earth itself. Go, child. Apeniman stood, his frail human form belying the power he still commanded among the elders. Tomorrow at sunset, the spirit cave. We'll form our strategy. Nanyehi slipped away, sliding down the rock face with practiced ease. Her hybrid SUV was hidden among the juniper trees half a mile away. As she moved silently through the underbrush, her mind raced with plans and contingencies. Her phone vibrated, in her pocket. A text from Maya, her only human friend in Phoenix. Urgent. Someone was asking for you at the gallery. Tall, intimidating, native. Said he was family. I got goosebumps, Nan. Bad ones. Cursing under her breath,
Nanyehi picked up her pace. Wakinyan was nothing if not thorough. He had undoubtedly tracked her to her workplace, which meant her apartment wasn't safe either. The city lights glimmered in the distance as she reached her vehicle. Just as she unlocked the door, a shadow detached itself from the darkness behind her. "Running again, Nanyehi?" The voice was deep, resonant, familiar, in ways that made her blood sing despite her resistance. She turned slowly, facing the man who had pursued her across three states. Wakinyan stood 6'4", his powerful frame outlined by moonlight. At 35, he carried himself with the authority of a natural leader. His black hair was cut, short on the sides but longer on top, a modern style that contrasted with the traditional silver and turquoise cuff bracelet on his wrist, the symbol of his status as Alpha. "Not running," she replied, echoing her earlier words to a Penniman. "Choosing." Wakinyan stepped closer, and Nanyehi forced herself to stand her ground despite every instinct screaming to retreat. His scent enveloped her, stronger now, more insistent. "You've been avoiding your responsibilities to the clan," he said, his dark eyes reflecting pinpoints of amber. "To me." "I have responsibilities to myself first," Nanyehi replied. "The mate bond doesn't give you ownership, Wakinyan." His jaw tightened. "Is that what you think this is about? Ownership? Isn't it? You've tracked me across half the country. You've infiltrated my workplaces, threatened my friends." "I've protected what's mine," he growled, the sound barely human. Nanyehi felt her own wolf stir in response, anger rising hot and fast. "I am not yours. I never agreed to this bond." "Some things aren't chosen, Nanyehi. They're written in blood and bone." Wakinyan reached out, his fingers hovering near her, face but not touching, as if he knew she would shatter at his touch. "The council has been patient, but that patience wears thin. Your defiance affects more than just us." "What do you mean?" she asked, suspicion creeping into her voice. "Your grandmother's legacy protected you for a time, but the balance of power shifts. The northern clans have proposed an alliance through mating. They've offered daughters for the unmated males in our clan." Nanyehi's heart sank. Politics. It always came back to clan politics and bloodlines. "And my compliance would prevent this alliance?" Wakinyan's expression darkened. "An alpha with an unclaimed mate is seen as weak. The northern clans circle like vultures, waiting for our union. To fail, so they can step in. Their alpha has made it clear. If you reject the bond, they will take it as an invitation to challenge my leadership. So I'm supposed to sacrifice my freedom for your position?" Nanyehi laughed bitterly. "That's not very convincing, Wakinyan." "It's not just about position," he replied, his voice dropping to a dangerous register. "It's about protection. The northern clan's methods are primitive. Their treatment of females, especially those with power like yours, is harsh. If they gain influence here, I can protect myself." "Can you protect the entire clan? The children? The elders?" Wakinyan stepped closer, now merely inches away. "Your grandmother understood sacrifice for the greater good." The mention of her grandmother stung. Nanyehi had been only 16 when Grandmother Tala died, leaving her with a legacy she never wanted and secrets she was still uncovering. "My grandmother also understood choice," she countered. "And she wanted better for me than what she endured." Something flashed in Wakinyan's eyes, a moment of genuine hurt quickly masked by determination. "The council meets at the next full moon. You have until then to accept your role willingly." "And if I don't?" His expression hardened. "Then the council will decide whether your rights as an individual outweigh the needs of the many, and Nanyehi..." He leaned closer, his breath warm against her ear. "They rarely do." With that, he turned and walked away, disappearing into the darkness with supernatural speed. Nanyehi slumped against her SUV, heart pounding. The threat was clear.
yet something about this encounter felt different. For the first time, Wakanyan had spoken of clan politics rather than just their bond. There were larger forces at work, forces her grandmother had possibly shielded her from. As she drove toward Phoenix, Nanyehi made a decision. She wouldn't run again. It was time to uncover the truth about her grandmother's past, the mate bond, and the secrets that seemed to swirl around her existence, and she knew exactly where to start. The old trunk in her storage unit contained all of Grandmother Tala's journals, writing she had been too afraid to read until now. But if they contained information that could help her fight this battle, on her own terms, it was worth facing whatever painful truths lay within those pages. Little did she know, the first journal entry would reveal a secret so devastating it would shatter everything she believed about her heritage, her clan, and her fated bond with Wakanyan. A secret powerful enough to ignite a war between clans that had maintained an uneasy peace for generations. Darkness had fully descended by the time she reached the city limits, the modern skyline a stark contrast to the ancient landscape she had left behind. Two worlds, eternally in conflict. Just like the two sides of her nature. Tomorrow she would begin her true fight, not just for freedom from an unwanted bond, but for the very soul of her people's future. Headlights flashed in her rearview mirror. A black SUV, maintaining a careful distance, watched. Dust motes danced in the beam of Nanyehi's flashlight as she knelt before the old cedar trunk in her climate-controlled storage unit. The pre-dawn hour ensured privacy, something increasingly rare in her life. With trembling fingers, she traced the intricate wolf carvings adorning the lid. Symbols of protection and wisdom passed through generations of her grandmother's line. I should have done this years ago, she whispered to herself, inserting the small brass key that had hung around her neck since Tala's death. The lock resisted, then yielded with a decisive click. The scent of sage, cedar, and old paper wafted up as she lifted the heavy lid. Dozens of leather-bound journals filled the trunk, meticulously dated and organized. Beneath them lay ceremonial items, a hand drum, beaded regalia, and a leather pouch that radiated energy so potent Nanyahi's fingers tingled when they hovered above it. She selected the earliest journal, dated 50 years prior, when her grandmother would have been just 20, around the time she would have faced her own mate bond ceremony. The first entry confirmed what Nanyehi had always suspected. The council has decreed my bond to Makia will be formalized at the next moon. He is strong, respected, and completely wrong for me. My heart belongs to another, a love that our traditions forbid. I wear the mask of compliance, but inside, rebellion burns. Nanyehi settled against the wall, immersed in her grandmother's words as dawn broke outside. Page after page revealed a young woman's struggle against a system that valued bloodlines over happiness. Tala had eventually submitted to her bond with Makia, Nanyahi's grandfather, a stern alpha who had died before her birth. 3 hours later, Nanyehi reached an entry that made her blood freeze. What I do now, I do for the survival of our people, though they would call it treason. The Northern Alpha's son, Hakathomema, shares my vision for unity through choice, not coercion. Our forbidden meetings have borne fruit. I carry his child, though Makia believes the baby is his. The deception tears at my soul, but this child represents hope for a future where Canyon and Northern blood unite in peace. Not political arrangement. Nanyahi's hands shook so violently that the journal tumbled to the concrete floor. Her mother, Tala's only daughter, had not been the child of the Canyon Clan Alpha, but of the Northern Clan's heir, which meant, I'm half Northern Clan, she whispered into the stillness. The implications crashed over her like a thunderous wave. The mate bond with Wakanyan, supposedly predestined by shared Canyon Clan ancestry, was built on a foundation of lies. More disturbing still, if the Northern Clan ever discovered that one of their own bloodline was being claimed by a Canyon Alpha against her will. Her phone vibrated. Maya again. Someone broke into your apartment last night. Police are there now. It's bad, Nan. Cursing, Nanyahi hastily gathered the journals, stuffing several into her backpack along with the mysterious leather pouch. She couldn't return to her apartment, and the gallery where she worked was undoubtedly watched. As she locked the storage unit, a familiar sensation prickled along her spine, the awareness of being hunted. Moving casually toward her SUV, she scanned the nearly empty parking lot. A dark sedan was parked three spaces away, its windows tinted beyond legal limits. Northern Clan, most likely. Wakanyan's people preferred trucks and SUVs. Nanyahi slid into her vehicle, mind racing. She needed allies, information, and time. Three things in desperately short supply. Her phone rang. Unknown number. Nanyahi. The voice belonged to Keme, Wakanyan's younger brother and chief enforcer. Unlike his domineering sibling, Keme had always treated her with a strange mix of respect and wariness. "How did you get this number?" she demanded, starting her engine. "That's irrelevant." His tone was clipped, urgent. "The Northern Clan sent representatives early. They're meeting with the council tonight, not at the full moon as planned. Something's accelerated their timeline." Nanyahi's grip tightened on the steering wheel. "Why are you telling me this?" A pause. "Because things aren't what they seem. Wakanyan isn't what you think." "Then what is he?" "Meet me at Sentinel Rock at noon. Come alone." The line went dead. Nanyahi sat motionless, weighing her options. Keme could be setting a trap, or offering genuine help. Either way, she needed more information before making her next move. She drove to a small diner on the outskirts of Phoenix, one with poor cell reception and plenty of escape routes. After ordering coffee she would never drink, she opened the leather pouch from her grandmother's trunk. Inside was a small wooden figurine of a wolf with two heads facing opposite directions, carved from a single piece of wood. Wrapped around it was a yellowed note in her grandmother's handwriting. "When blood divides, this totem unites. Speak the old words beneath twin moons to reveal the path between worlds." Cryptic, like everything else about her heritage. Nanyahi pocketed the figurine and continued reading the journals, piecing together a story far more complex than she had imagined. Her grandmother had maintained her secret relationship with the Northern Alpha's son for years. More shocking still, Tala had been a powerful dreamwalker, a rare shifter who could traverse the boundary between physical and spiritual realms. The ability was hereditary, appearing in only one female per generation. "My daughter shows no signs of the gift, which relieves and saddens me. Relief, for she will not bear my burden. Sadness, for without a dreamwalker, the gateway between worlds weakens. When she bears a daughter, the gift will reawaken. Stronger, perhaps, than even mine." Nanyahi had experienced unusual dreams throughout her life. Vivid visions of running through ancient forests, of speaking with animals and ancestors long dead. She had dismissed them as imagination. Now, she wondered. The diner's bell jingled as new customers entered. Nanyahi tensed, sensing rather than seeing the newcomers. Two men, moving with the fluid grace of predators trying to appear human. Northern Clan, based on their scent. Without looking up, she gathered her belongings and headed for the restroom. The narrow window provided a tight but manageable escape route. Once outside, she circled back to her SUV, keeping the building between herself and the diner's entrance. As she drove toward Sentinel Rock, her mind whirled with implications. If she truly carried Northern blood, Wakanyan's claim on her violated the most sacred of shifter laws, the prohibition against forced cross-clan bonds. Such an act could trigger war between clans already balanced on the edge of conflict. Was this what Keme wanted to tell her? Or was there something even darker, beneath the surface? Sentinel Rock loomed against the cloudless sky, a natural formation resembling a watchful guardian. Nanyahi parked a quarter mile away,
approaching on foot through scrub that provided minimal cover. Her wolf senses stretched outward, sampling the air for threats. Kim waited at the base of the formation, alone as promised. At 32, he was 3 years younger than Wakanyan, but carried himself with less authority and more caution. His hair was longer, tied back with a leather cord, and he wore modern clothes that helped him blend in human society. "You came," he said, visibly relieved. "I need answers more than I need safety right now," Nanyehi replied, maintaining distance between them. "Why did you contact me?" Keme glanced nervously at the horizon. "Because Wakanyan isn't pursuing you for the reasons you think. This isn't about tradition or even the mate bond itself. Then what is it about?" "Power." Keme's voice dropped. "Your specific power. Wakanyan knows what you are, what you can do." A chill ran down Nanyehi's spine. "What do you mean?" "You're a dreamwalker, like your grandmother. Perhaps the most powerful one born in centuries." He stepped closer, voice urgent. "The Canyon and Northern clans have maintained an uneasy truce for decades, but resources grow scarce. Territory disputes increase. Wakanyan believes the only path to security lies in accessing the ancestral hunting grounds." "The spiritual realm," Nanyehi whispered, pieces falling into place. "He needs a dreamwalker to open the gateway." Kemi nodded. "A dreamwalker bound to him through the mate bond would have no choice but to use her abilities as he commanded. The spiritual realm contains game without end, resources without limit." "And dangers beyond understanding," Nanyehi finished, recalling passages from her grandmother's journal describing the perils of crossing between worlds. "There's more," Kem continued. "The Northern clan sent scouts because they suspect your heritage. If they confirm you carry their bloodline, and that Wakanyan attempts to force a bond, it would mean war." Nanyehi's mind raced. "Does Wakanyan know about my Northern blood?" A shadow crossed Kemi's face. "Yes. He's known since before your first meeting. It's why he's so determined. A dreamwalker with mixed blood could potentially access both clans' ancestral grounds." Anger flared hot in Nanyehi's chest. "All this time, he's been manipulating me." "As have others," Kemi interrupted, his expression grim. "Did you never wonder why a Penniman, your grandmother's brother, encouraged you to challenge Wakanyan publicly? He serves neither you nor my brother. He serves the balance between realms, as all elders must." "What does that mean?" Nanyehi demanded. "It means," Kemi began, before freezing mid-sentence. He inhaled sharply, eyes widening. "We're not alone." The air shifted, carrying a new scent, unfamiliar yet somehow recognizable to Nanyehi on a bone-deep level. Northern clan, but not the same men from the diner. A tall figure emerged from behind a boulder 30 yards away. Unlike the enforcers, who had hunted her, this man carried himself with unmistakable authority. His hair was long, streaked with premature silver despite his apparent age of 40-something. Traditional tattoos adorned his forearms, markings of the Northern Alpha. "Fascinating conversation," the man called, approaching with measured steps. "Please continue." Kimi moved protectively in front of Nanyehi. "Hakatomema, you're early for the council meeting." The name hit Nanyehi like a physical blow. Hakatomema, her biological grandfather, according to Tala's journals. "I found more compelling business elsewhere," the Northern Alpha replied, his gaze fixed on Nanyehi. "When my scouts reported a female with canyon markings but northern scent, I had to investigate personally." Nanyehi stepped forward, despite Keme's attempt to block her. "You knew my grandmother." Something flickered in the man's dark eyes. Pain, perhaps. Or regret. "Tala. Yes, I knew her better than most." He studied Nanyehi's face. "You have her eyes. And her spirit, judging by the trouble you've caused." "If what I suspect is true," Nanyehi said carefully, "you are more than an acquaintance of my grandmother." Hakathomema's expression remained impassive, but his scent changed subtly. Confirmation enough. "We don't have time for family reunions," Kemi interjected urgently. "Wakinyan will have noticed my absence by now. Nanyehi needs to disappear. Before I what, brother?" The new voice, deep and commanding, came from the ridge above them. Wakinyan stood silhouetted against the sky, flanked by four clan enforcers. His expression, when he looked at Kemi, contained more sorrow than anger. "Betrayal seems to run in all our bloodlines," he said, descending with predatory grace. The tension in the air thickened, charged with the potential for violence. Nanyehi found herself at the center of a triangle formed by Wakinyan, Kemi, and Hakathomema. Three men representing different paths, different loyalties, different futures. "This doesn't need to end in bloodshed," she said, keeping her voice steady despite her racing heart. "On that, we agree," Wakinyan replied, his gaze never leaving the northern alpha. "Hakathomema knows the law. A dreamwalker must be bonded by her 29th year, or risk losing control of her abilities. With your birthday approaching, the time for discussion has passed. A law created by your ancestors to control ours," Hakathomema countered. "The girl carries northern blood. Your claim violates the ancient covenant between clans." "My claim predates knowledge of her mixed heritage," Wakinyan replied smoothly. "The council has recognized it as valid." "A council you control," Hakathomema's voice hardened. "Stop." Nanyahi's command cut through their argument. "I'm not a prize to be won or a tool to be used. I've read my grandmother's journals. I know what happened between her and you," she looked at Hakathomema, "and what was stolen from both of you." Surprise registered on the northern alpha's face. "She kept journals?" "Detailed ones," Nanyehi confirmed. "About her abilities, about her true feelings for my supposed grandfather, about her vision for peace between clans. Everything." "Those journals belong to the council," Wakinyan stated, taking a step forward. "They belong to me," Nanyehi countered, backing away. "Just as my choice belongs to me." The ground beneath them trembled slightly, an almost imperceptible vibration that caused all three men to exchange alarmed glances. "The gateway grows unstable," Kem murmured. "Without a bonded dreamwalker to maintain it." "Then I'll bond with one of my own clan," Hakathomema interrupted, gesturing to the men who had materialized behind him. "Takoda is of age, carries strong northern blood, and would make a worthy mate." Nanyehi followed his gesture to a young man standing slightly apart from the others. Tall and muscular with intelligent eyes, he carried himself with quiet confidence. When their gazes met, something electric passed between them. Recognition on a level deeper than conscious thought. "This is not a negotiation," Wakinyan growled, his eyes beginning to glow with the amber light of an impending shift. "Nor is it your decision," Hakathomema replied, his own eyes reflecting a colder blue light. The ground trembled again, more insistently this time. A distant howl echoed through the canyons, a sound that belonged to neither world. Nanyehi felt it then, a pulling sensation in her chest, as if something were trying to unravel her from within. The wooden figurine in her pocket grew hot against her thigh. "The gateway," she gasped, understanding flooding her. "It's opening on its own." All eyes turned to her as she stumbled, suddenly dizzy. Images flashed behind her eyes. Forests untouched by human development. Mountains higher than any on Earth. Creatures that defied description. The ancestral hunting grounds calling to her blood. "She needs to be bonded now." Wakinyan moved, toward her, purpose in every line of his body. "Before it's too late." "Touch her and die," Hakathomema snarled, shifting partially, claws extending from human hands. As the leaders of two ancient clans prepared to battle over her fate, Nanyehi made her choice. She pulled the twin-headed wolf figurine from her pocket and, guided by instinct rather than knowledge, spoke words in a language she had never studied, yet somehow knew intimately. By blood divided, by spirit united, I claim my power as my own. The figurine burst into blue flame in her palm, painless yet blindingly bright. The ground beneath them split, not physically, but spiritually, creating a shimmering veil between dimensions. Through the veil stepped a Penniman, but not as Nanyahai had ever seen him. Gone was the frail elder. In his place stood a warrior in his prime, eyes glowing with otherworldly power. "The Dreamwalker has chosen," he announced, his voice resonating with authority that silenced all others. "Neither canyon nor northern. She stands on the boundary as her grandmother did. As I do." "This is impossible," Wakinyan breathed, taking an involuntary step back. "You're a guardian." "The last of the old ones," a Penniman confirmed. "And she," he gestured to Nanyahi, "is the first of the new." As revelation dawned in the eyes of those gathered, the veil between worlds pulsed with increasing urgency. Something was coming through. Something ancient and powerful that had been waiting for this exact moment, this precise alignment of bloodlines and circumstance. A massive wolf, larger than any natural predator, emerged partially through the veil. Its fur shifted between midnight black and silver, its eyes pools of wisdom and wildness combined. It fixed its gaze on Nanyahi, a silent communication passing between them. "The guardian of the gateway," a Penniman explained softly. "It has chosen its new companion." The implications were staggering. A role beyond Alpha or Dreamwalker. A purpose that transcended clan politics and mate bonds. As the revelation settled, over the gathered shifters, the ground gave a final, violent shudder. The veil between worlds stretched thin, threatening to tear completely. Without a fully realized Dreamwalker to maintain it, the barrier between realms was collapsing, with consequences none could fully predict. "Choose now, Nanyahi," a Penniman urged, extending his hand toward her. "Before both worlds suffer for our mistakes." With the gateway fracturing, ancient enemies poised for battle, and her own power surging beyond control, Nanyahi faced the most important decision of her existence, one that would alter the fate of not just two clans, but two, worlds inextricably bound by blood and spirit. The massive guardian wolf howled, a sound that seemed to freeze time itself as the veil rippled dangerously around them all. Decisions. Thunder crashed overhead as Nanyahi stood suspended between worlds, the raw power of the fractured gateway surging through her veins like lightning. The twin-headed wolf figurine had dissolved into glittering dust that now swirled around her in a protective cyclone of ancestral magic. "The veil won't hold," a Penniman shouted above the otherworldly howling that emanated from the spirit realm. "You must complete the ritual," Tala began. Nanyahai's mind raced through the fragments of information from her grandmother's journals. "What ritual?" She never finished explaining. "Because she couldn't," Hakathomama interjected, stepping forward despite the dangerous energy crackling through the air. "The joining of bloodlines was only the first step. The second required sacrifice she wasn't willing to make." The massive guardian wolf paced along the boundary between worlds, its dual-colored fur rippling as reality itself fluctuated around it. Its intelligent eyes remained fixed on Nanyahi, expectant and ancient. "What sacrifice?" she demanded, even as understanding began to dawn. "A dreamwalker must surrender something precious to fully claim their power," a Penniman explained, his youthful appearance beginning to flicker as the strain of manifesting between realms took its toll. "Your grandmother chose love over duty. She wouldn't sacrifice her connection to Hakathomema, even to stabilize the gateway. So she left it vulnerable," Wakinyan added, his anger momentarily overshadowed by the immediacy of their shared danger. "For decades, the passage between worlds has weakened because she refused to complete the binding." Don't you dare blame her, Hakathomima growled, his partial shift progressing further as emotion overcame control. She protected both clans at great personal cost. The ground beneath them lurched violently, throwing several of the gathered shifters off balance. Through the widening tears in the veil, shadowy creatures began to materialize, spirits that had been trapped between realms for generations, neither fully alive nor dead. "There's no time for this," Nanyahi shouted. "What exactly must I do?" Apeniman steadied himself against a boulder, his form now rapidly alternating between elder and warrior as his connection to the physical world deteriorated. "You must choose which world will claim your primary allegiance, and what you're willing to surrender to make that choice binding." "I don't understand." "Your heart or your freedom," Joaquinian translated bluntly. "The same choice every dreamwalker faces. Bind yourself willingly to a mate, anchoring your power to this world, or surrender your connection to humanity and become a guardian like a Penemon, forever walking between realms, but belonging fully to neither." The impossible choice hung in the air between heartbeats. Nanyehi looked from Joaquinian to Takoda, the young northern clan warrior, whose presence inexplicably resonated with her own. Then to a Penemon, whose existence suddenly made tragic sense. He had chosen guardian status, surrendering his chance at love and connection to maintain the balance between worlds. "There has to be another way," she insisted, even as the veil tore wider. The guardian wolf let out a low, rumbling growl that seemed to vibrate through Nanyehi's bones. It padded fully into the physical realm now, circling her with measured steps. When it spoke, the words formed directly in her mind, rather than in the air. "There is always another path, young one, but few have the courage to forge it." "Tell me," she whispered. "The division between clans is artificial, created by those who feared the power of unified bloodlines. True stability comes not from separation, but from harmony." Understanding bloomed like fire in Nanyahi's mind. "The twin-headed wolf, it represents unity, not division." The wolf inclined its massive head. "Your grandmother began the work. You must complete it." With sudden clarity, Nanyehi knew what she had to do. She stepped toward the center of the gateway disturbance, where the veil was thinnest. "Stop her!" Joaquinian commanded his enforcers. But the shifting energies around Nanyehi made approach impossible. She raised her hands toward the fractured veil, feeling both worlds pulling at her essence. "I choose both realms," she declared, her voice carrying the weight of generations. "And I sacrifice neither heart nor freedom, but pride. The pride that has kept our clans divided for centuries." The guardian wolf's approval radiated through her consciousness as it moved to stand beside her. Together, they faced the assembled shifters. "Canyon and northern blood already flows united in my veins," Nanyehi continued. "The division between our people is based on fear, not necessity. I will not choose one world or one clan over another. I will bridge them." The energy surrounding her intensified, the glittering dust from the figurine swirling faster. "This is madness," Joaquinian protested. "The old laws were created by those who feared what they couldn't control," Hakathomema finished, a newfound respect evident in his expression as he watched his granddaughter. Nanyehi extended her hands, one toward Joaquinian, one toward Takoda. "A new bond must be formed, not of possession or politics, but of partnership and balance." Apeniman's form stabilized momentarily as hope flickered across his features. "The triad bond," he whispered. "It hasn't been attempted in 1,000 years. "What is she proposing?" Keme asked, voicing the confusion evident on many faces. "A bond between 3 instead of 2, Apeniman explained. "A dreamwalker and representatives from both clans, creating a living bridge between worlds." The gathered shifters murmured in shock and disbelief. Such a bond violated every tradition they had known. "Impossible," Joaquinian scoffed, though,
Uncertainty had crept into his voice. No more impossible than my existence, Nanyahi countered. I am already both Canyon and Northern. I simply propose to formalize what already exists within me. The veil pulsed ominously, reminding them all of the immediate danger. This could destroy all three of you, a Penniman warned. The power required... Or it could heal what has been broken for generations, Nanyahi replied. She looked directly at Wakinyan, seeing him truly for perhaps the first time, not as an adversary or a would-be captor, but as a leader bearing the immense weight of responsibility for his people's survival. You pursued me not from desire, but from duty, she said softly. I understand that now. Wakinyan's expression shifted, pride warring with pragmatism. Our traditions have preserved us for centuries. And now they will destroy us if we cling to them too rigidly. Nanyahi gestured to the fracturing veil. Choose, Wakinyan, partnership or destruction. She turned to Takoda, who had remained silent throughout the exchange. And you, a warrior I've just met but whose blood recognizes mine. Will you risk everything for a new way forward? Takoda stepped closer, studying her with eyes that reflected intelligence and caution. My father always taught me that evolution is survival, he said, glancing at Hakathomema. If this heals the rift between our people... He nodded once, decisively. I'm willing. All eyes turned to Wakinyan, whose authority among the Canyon clan made his decision crucial. The proud Alpha stood rigid, centuries of tradition warring, with the undeniable reality before him. The guardian wolf approached him, its massive form making even Wakinyan appear small. It stared into his eyes, a silent communication passing between them. Whatever he saw in those ancient eyes seemed to reach him. His shoulders straightened as he made his decision. For my people, he said finally, stepping forward to stand opposite Takoda, with Nanyahi between them. Not for power or possession, but for survival. A Penniman moved to complete their circle, his form now stabilized by proximity to the growing power. Speak the words your blood remembers, Dreamwalker, he instructed Nanyahi. Let your spirit guide you. Nanyahi closed her eyes, allowing the knowledge that had lain dormant in her heritage to surface. Words in a language older than any human tongue flowed from her lips as she took the hands of both men. The glittering dust from the figurine encircled, all three of them, spinning faster until it formed a shimmering cocoon of energy. Where their hands joined, a luminous thread appeared, weaving between their connected fingers and spiraling upward to their hearts. Pain lanced through Nanyahi as the bond began to form. Not the submission of self she had feared, but an expansion, as if her consciousness were stretching to accommodate new dimensions. She felt Wakinyan's strength and determination flowing into her, along with Takoda's adaptability and quiet courage. Through their connected energy, she glimpsed their innermost selves. Wakinyan's lifetime of sacrifice for his clan, the crushing responsibility that had hardened him into the unyielding alpha she had resented. Takoda's struggle to honor tradition, while embracing change, his secret studies of human societies and technologies that could help their people adapt. In turn, they experienced her lifetime of running, of searching for identity between worlds, of the power she had suppressed out, a fear. The guardian wolf circled them, its massive form moving through the cocoon of energy without disrupting it. With each circuit, the fractured veil began to stabilize, the tears slowly mending as the balance between realms restored itself. It's working, a Penniman breathed, watching in wonder as shadowy spirits retreated back to their proper realm. The final threads of the bond snapped into place with a surge of power that illuminated the entire canyon. When the light faded, Nanyahi stood transformed, her eyes now reflecting both the amber of Canyon Clan and the blue of Northern Blood, perfectly balanced. Wakinyan and Takoda appeared similarly changed,
each bearing subtle marks of the other's clan alongside their own. "The triad is formed," a Penniman announced formally, addressing the stunned witnesses from both clans. "A new covenant between peoples, between worlds." The guardian wolf howled in triumph, the sound echoing between realms as a proclamation and a promise. As the immediate danger passed, the practical implications of what they had done began to emerge. Hakathomima approached the triad, his expression unreadable. "The council will resist this," he said bluntly. "Centuries of separation cannot be undone in a moment, regardless of necessity." "They will follow their alpha," Wakinyan replied, a new timbre in his voice as the bond settled within him. "And I now stand for unity, not division." "As do I," Takoda affirmed, meeting his father's gaze steadily. Hakathomema studied his son, then his newly discovered granddaughter. "Tala would be proud," he said finally, the closest he could come to expressing his own approval. The ground had stopped shaking, the veil now a shimmering, stable barrier between worlds rather than a fractured wound. The guardian wolf sat on its haunches, watching the proceedings with ancient patience. "What happens now?" Keem asked, addressing no one in particular. "Now," Nanyahi replied, feeling the balanced power flowing through her. "We rebuild. Not as Canyon or Northern, but as one clan." As night fell, the newly formed triad led their people back toward the council grounds, the guardian wolf following at a distance. The journey ahead would be challenging. Traditions don't yield easily to change, even necessary change. But for the first time in generations, there was hope for true unity. Walking between Wakinyan and Takoda, Nanyahi felt neither trapped nor diminished by the bond they shared. Instead, she experienced a completion she hadn't known she was missing. Not a surrender of self, but an expansion of possibility. The twin moons rose over the canyon, their light illuminating the path. Forward, the old world was ending, but a new one, balanced between tradition and evolution, between physical and spiritual, was just beginning. And at its center stood three, who had chosen to become something greater than themselves alone could ever be. Transformation. Winter descended upon the canyon lands with unusual ferocity, as if testing the resolve of the newly formed alliance. 3 months had passed since the triad bond ceremony, months filled with diplomatic negotiations, resistance from traditionalists, and the painstaking integration of two clans with centuries of separate development. Nanyehi stood atop council, Ridge, watching snow blanket the expansive territory that now functioned, somewhat tenuously, as the unified homeland of what many still referred to as separate clans. The guardian wolf, whom she had named Niabi, Shadow Walker, lay nearby, its massive form a comforting presence in both physical and spiritual matters. "The northern hunting parties returned with less than half the expected game," Wakinyan reported, climbing the ridge to join her. Though his voice remained steady, Nanyahi felt his concern through their bond, a connection that had proven both more complex and more valuable than any of them had anticipated. "The spirits warned of a harsh season," she replied, turning to face him. Their relationship had evolved into something neither had expected, a partnership based on mutual respect rather than dominance and submission. "The Eastern Valleys should still have elk. I've seen them through the veil." Wakinyan nodded, trusting her insight without question now. "Takoda has already redirected the hunting parties." He paused, studying her face. "You're troubled." "It wasn't a question." The triad bond made concealing emotions from each other nearly impossible, though they had all learned to maintain some mental privacy through discipline and practice. "The council meeting yesterday," Nanyahi admitted. "Elder Maka's faction grows more vocal in their opposition. They believe the merging of clan territories violates sacred boundaries." "Maka fears change, not sacrilege," Wakinyan replied, his breath fogging in the cold air. "He's lost influence since the unification." It's more than politics, Nanyehi insisted. There's something else, something he's hiding. When he speaks against the triad, his energy fluctuates in a way that suggests deception. Wakinyan considered this, absently adjusting the silver and turquoise cuff that now bore both canyon and northern symbols. You think he's working with outside forces? I'm not certain, Nanyehi admitted. But last night, I dreamed of shadows, gathering at the eastern border, shadows with human shapes but hollow cores. Niabi raised her massive head at this, a low growl rumbling in her chest. The guardian wolf had proven particularly sensitive to threats that straddled the boundary between worlds. You should tell Takoda, Wakinyan suggested. His trackers have reported unusual activity in that region. Humans with advanced surveillance, equipment moving in patterns that suggest more than casual observation. The mention of Takoda sent a different ripple through their bond. Something warmer, more personal. The complex dynamic between the three of them had developed unexpectedly over the months. While the triad was primarily a spiritual and political alliance, deeper emotional connections had formed, particularly between Nanyehi and Takoda, whose shared intellectual curiosity and adaptable nature had created a natural affinity. Wakinyan, ever perceptive, noticed her reaction. He should return from the border patrol by nightfall, he said, a hint of amusement coloring his tone. I'm sure he'll seek you out immediately. Nanyehi shot him a look that was half irritation, half appreciation for his understanding. Their bond had revealed Wakinyan to be far more nuanced than the domineering alpha she had once perceived him to be. His primary devotion remained to his people's welfare, but he had proven capable of personal growth that continually surprised her. The strength of the triad depends on honesty between us, she reminded him, including about our evolving relationships. I've never objected to your connection with Takoda, Wakinyan replied evenly. The old me might have, but that man is evolving. Before Nanyehi could respond, a mental alarm flared through their bond, Takoda sending an urgent warning. Simultaneously, Niabi leapt to her feet, hackles raised as she stared toward the eastern horizon. Something's coming, Nanyehi whispered, extending her senses toward the disturbance. Something that doesn't belong in either realm. They descended the ridge quickly, Niabi loping ahead as they approached the main settlement. The integration of canyon and northern living patterns had produced a unique community, traditional dwellings alongside modern structures, communal areas designed to encourage interaction between formerly separate clans. A Penniman awaited them, at the base of the ridge, his elderly form belying the power he still commanded as senior guardian and chief spiritual advisor to the triad. You felt it? He asked without preamble. Nanyehi nodded. Takoda sent a warning. What is it, a Penniman? The old man's face creased with worry. A breach, but not like any I've witnessed in my centuries of watching the Veil. This comes from neither our world nor the spirit realm. A third realm? Wakinyan asked, skepticism evident in his tone. Not precisely, a Penniman replied. More like an artificial gateway, a forced opening created through technology rather than natural energy. The implications chilled Nanyehi, more than the winter air. Humans, she whispered. Humans with knowledge of the Veil. A Penniman nodded grimly. There have always been those who sought the power of the spirit realm without understanding its nature. In the past, such attempts failed because they lacked a crucial element. A dreamwalker, Wakinyan concluded, his protective instincts flaring through the bond as he moved closer to Nanyehi. Or something that mimics dreamwalker energy, a Penniman confirmed. The journals your grandmother kept. Did you bring all of them from storage? Nanyehi's blood ran cold. No, I only took the oldest ones, those pertaining to her early years, and her relationship with Hakathamema. The later journals, she trailed off, realization dawning.
They might contain information about her abilities, her techniques for accessing the veil.
Information that could be weaponized in the wrong hands, Wakinyan growled.
A commotion at the eastern perimeter interrupted their conversation. Takoda arrived on horseback, his normally composed features tense with urgency. Several northern trackers accompanied him, along with a human woman whose presence in their territory was unprecedented. Takoda dismounted in a fluid motion, approaching the triad with the human woman following cautiously behind. Through their bond, Nanyehi felt his conflicted emotions. Alarm mingled with reluctant trust toward the stranger. "This is Dr. Maya, Blackwood," Takoda introduced. "She approached our border voluntarily with information she claims concerns us all." Nanyehi started at the name. "Maya? My colleague from the gallery in Phoenix?" The woman nodded, relief evident in her expression. "I've been trying to find you for months, Nan. After your apartment was ransacked, you just disappeared." "How did you find this place?" Wakinyan demanded, suspicion evident in his stance. Maya squared her shoulders, refusing to be intimidated, despite being surrounded by powerful shifters. "I followed the people who took Nanyahi's grandmother's journals. It led me to a research facility operated by Nexus Biochem, a corporation with government contracts and a disturbing interest in what they call interdimensional energy dynamics." "You're a scientist?" Apeniman asked, studying her with ancient eyes.
"An art historian with a background in Native American cultural artifacts," Maya corrected.
"I recognized the symbols in Tala's journals when they were displayed at your workspace," she added, addressing Nanyahi directly. "They matched petroglyphs I've studied that depict the boundary between physical and spiritual realms."
"Why come to us now?" Nanyehi asked, sensing there was more to Maya's story.
"Because Nexus has moved beyond research," Maya replied grimly. "3 days ago, they activated some kind of device at their facility near Carson Ridge. There was an energy surge that affected electronic equipment for miles, and then..." She hesitated, as if doubting her own words. "Something came through. Something that wasn't human or animal." Niabi growled, confirming the truth of Maya's account.
"Spirit entities drawn to artificial energy," Apeniman murmured. "Without proper guidance or containment."
"How many?" Wakinyan asked sharply.
"I don't know," Maya admitted. "But they've quarantined the entire research wing. There have been casualties." The implications settled heavily over the group. Entities from the spirit realm, pulled into the physical world without proper transition or boundaries, could be deeply destructive, hungering for life energy they no longer possessed.
"We need to contain this breach immediately," Nanyehi decided, her dreamwalker instincts surging to the forefront. "Before these entities spread beyond the facility."
"It could be a trap," Wakinyan cautioned. "If these humans sought your grandmother's knowledge, they may be attempting to draw you out."
"Whether it's a trap or not, the breach must be sealed," Apeniman interjected. "Uncontained spirit entities in the physical realm will grow stronger and more numerous with each life they consume." Takoda, who had remained thoughtfully silent, finally spoke.
"We need more information before charging into a human facility. Dr. Blackwood, what exactly does Nexus hope to achieve with this research?"
Maya's expression darkened. "Based on the documents I was able to access, they're interested in the regenerative properties of what they call the alternate biosphere. Healing properties, extended longevity, enhancement of human capabilities. They seek to exploit the spirit realm's resources," Nanyehi translated, disgust evident in her tone. "Just as humans have exploited the physical world to near destruction."
"Not all humans share this mindset," Maya objected.
"I came here at considerable personal risk because I believe what they're doing is wrong, both scientifically and ethically." Wakinyan studied her with newfound respect.
"Your loyalty to Nanyehi is admirable."
"It's not just about Nan," Maya replied. "My grandmother was Lakota. She taught me to respect the boundaries between worlds, What Nexus is doing violates everything she believed in. This revelation shifted the energy of their interaction. Nanyehi felt Takoda's suspicion ease, replaced by cautious acceptance. "We need a plan," Nanyehi decided. "One that addresses both the immediate threat of loose spirits and the longer-term danger posed by Nexus." As darkness fell, the triad retreated to their private council chamber with Apeniman, Maya, and Hakathamema, who had arrived shortly after receiving word of the breach. The chamber, carved into the living rock of the canyon wall, was illuminated by a combination of modern lighting and traditional fire pits. "The facility is heavily guarded," Maya explained, sketching a rough layout from memory. "Military grade, security systems, armed personnel, restricted access points." "Our concern isn't the human defenses," Hakathomema noted. "It's the entities they've inadvertently released. What do we know about their nature?" "Without seeing them, I can only speculate," Apeniman replied. "But based on Dr. Blackwood's description of the energy signature, they likely originated from the deeper layers of the spirit realm, entities that have never been human or animal, with no understanding of physical limitations or moral boundaries." "Pure energy-seeking form," Nanyehi murmured, recalling passages from her grandmother's journals. "They'll latch on to the strongest emotional patterns available. Fear, rage, desire. Creating physical manifestations of those emotions," Takoda concluded. "No wonder there have been casualties." Wakinyan, who had been quietly contemplating the situation, finally spoke. "This requires a coordinated approach. We need a team to deal with the escaped entities and another to secure the breach, technology and Tala's journals." "I should lead the containment team," Nanyehi stated, feeling the responsibility of her Dreamwalker heritage. "I have the strongest connection to the spirit realm." "You're also the primary target if this is indeed a trap," Takoda countered, concern flowing through their bond. "Which is precisely why she should not go alone," Hakathomema suggested. "The triad functions as a unit for a reason. Together, your abilities are amplified, your vulnerabilities protected." "The old man is right," Wakinyan acknowledged with a respectful nod toward Hakathomema. "We go together or not at all." The planning continued well into the night, with Maya providing crucial details about the facility's layout and security protocols. By dawn, they had formulated a strategy that balanced caution with necessity. The breach sealing team would consist of the Triad, Apeniman, and Niobe, whose guardian status gave her unique abilities to track and contain spirit entities. A secondary team led by Kami and including elite warriors from both clans would secure the facility's perimeter and retrieve Tala's journals. As preparations were finalized, Nanyehi sought a moment alone with Maya, pulling her aside as the others dispersed to gather equipment. "Why did you really come, Maya?" she asked quietly. "The truth." Maya hesitated, then withdrew a folded paper from her pocket. "Because of this. I found it hidden in the binding of one of Tala's journals before Nexus took them." Nanyehi unfolded the paper, a letter in her grandmother's distinctive handwriting, addressed to her. "My dearest Nanyehi, if you are reading this, then the path I feared has come to pass. The human organization that calls itself Nexus has sought our kind's secrets for generations. They killed my sister in 1973, believing she was the Dreamwalker of our generation. I let them believe they had eliminated the threat to their ambitions, but they are persistent, and now they seek the ultimate prize. Unrestricted access to the spirit realm's resources. What they don't understand is that the balance between worlds cannot be controlled by technology or ambition. It requires sacrifice, wisdom, and harmony. Trust the guardian wolf. She is more than protector. She is the key to sealing forever. The artificial passages humans might create. The triad bond you have formed was prophesied in the oldest stories of our people. Three who become one, bridging not just clans, but worlds. The final step remains uncompleted, a choice only you three can make, when standing at the threshold between realities. Know that I am with you always, my granddaughter, my hope, my legacy. With eternal love, Tala. Nanyehi's hands trembled as she refolded the letter. She knew, she whispered. Somehow, she knew everything that would happen. Your grandmother was remarkable, Maya said softly. In the few interactions I had with her at cultural events, she always seemed to see through time itself. Thank you for bringing this to me, Nanyehi said, tucking the letter safely away. It changes our approach somewhat. As dawn broke over the canyon lands, the triad prepared for their most dangerous challenge yet. What had begun as a personal journey of identity for Nanyehi had evolved into a struggle with implications for multiple worlds. Standing between Wakinyan and Takoda, as the expedition prepared to depart, Nanyehi felt the weight of generations resting on her shoulders and the strength of the bond that now supported her. Whatever awaited them at the Nexus facility, they would face it not as separate individuals, but as a unified force bridging ancient wisdom and modern necessity. The guardian wolf howled, a sound that resonated between worlds as both warning and rallying cry. The time for preparation had ended. Now came the true test of the triad's power, and the future of the delicate balance between realms. Reckoning. Moonlight filtered through swirling mist as the triad approached the Nexus Biochem facility, a sprawling complex of modern architecture, incongruously nestled against the ancient rock formations of Carson Ridge. The night was unnaturally still. No wind rustled the pines. No nocturnal creatures called from their hiding places. Even the air felt heavy, charged with potential energy that prickled against exposed skin. Nanyehi moved with fluid grace, flanked by Wakinyan and Takoda. The 3 months of their bond had synchronized their movements to the point where they functioned almost as a single entity during times of danger. Behind them followed a Penniman, his elderly human form belying the power he commanded as a guardian. Niabi, the massive wolf, scouted ahead, her dual-colored fur shimmering between visibility and shadow as she traced the boundaries of the breach. The perimeter teams are in position, Takoda reported, receiving mental confirmation from Keme, through their clan bond. No alarm has been raised yet. They won't detect us by conventional means, Wakinyan replied with grim confidence. But their experiments with the veil may have given them other methods of surveillance. Nanyehi raised her hand, bringing their advance to a halt. Do you feel that? She whispered, extending her senses outward. Both men nodded, the triad bond amplifying their natural awareness. The air before them wavered like heat rising from summer pavement. But instead of warmth, it emanated a bone-deep chill that cut through their insulated clothing. A thin place, a Penniman murmured, using the ancient term for locations where the boundary between worlds naturally thinned. But artificially widened and held open by technology. Niabi returned to their side, her massive body tense with alertation. Through their special connection, Nanyehi received impressions rather than words, danger. Wrong energy, hungry shadows. The entities are contained within the facility for now, she translated for the others. But they're growing stronger, feeding on the fear and pain of the humans inside. How many? Wakinyan asked, already calculating the threat. Nanyehi closed, her eyes, letting her dreamwalker senses expand through the bond she shared with Niabi. 12. No. 13 distinct energies, varied in strength and hostility. And human casualties? Takoda's voice was tight with the concern that always characterized his approach to all life, regardless of species. Many injured, Nanyehi confirmed grimly. 7 dead. The entities consume their life force during the transition. A Penniman stepped forward, his weathered hand hovering over the wavering air. This breach is different from natural thin places. It's been anchored somehow, stabilized to prevent natural closure. Tala's research, Wakinyan growled.
They've adapted her techniques for maintaining gateway stability. But without understanding the cost, Nanyehai added, recalling her grandmother's letter. The balance requires sacrifice, willing sacrifice. They've forced it open, creating a wound rather than a doorway. Their planning was interrupted by the facility's perimeter alarms suddenly blaring to life. Floodlights cutting through the mist as security personnel scrambled into defensive positions. "We've been detected," Dakota stated unnecessarily. "No," Nanyehi realized, her connection to the spirit realm revealing the true cause. "The entities are making a coordinated push toward freedom. They've been testing the boundaries of their containment, and now they're breaking through." As if confirming her assessment, an unnatural screech echoed from within the facility, followed by gunfire and human screams. The wavering air before them pulsed, expanding outward as the artificial breach widened under pressure from the other side. "We need to move now," Wakinyan decided, shifting seamlessly into his role as tactical leader of the triad. "Before those, things escape into the wider world." The five of them approached the main entrance, no longer concerned with stealth. As they neared the security checkpoint, they witnessed the first direct evidence of the breach's effects. Two heavily armed, guards frozen in attitudes of terror, their bodies partially transparent as if their very substance had been partially consumed. "Spirit touch," a Penniman identified the condition. "Their life energy has been partially drawn into the other realm." "Can they be saved?" Dakota asked, already moving toward the afflicted humans. "If we seal the breach quickly enough," the old guardian confirmed. "Otherwise, the process will complete within hours." Nanyehi pressed her palm against the security door's electronic lock, channeling a burst of energy that overrode its circuits. "We need to reach the central research lab. That's where the breach technology will be housed." They moved through the facility with determined efficiency, encountering signs of increasing chaos as they progressed deeper. Abandoned equipment, overturned furniture, and more humans in various states of spirit touch. The entities had clearly rampaged through multiple sections, growing bolder and more destructive with each successful feeding. The first direct confrontation came at the entrance to the primary research wing. A shimmering figure blocked their path, vaguely humanoid, but constantly shifting, its form composed of swirling energy that approximated limbs and a head. Where a face should have been, only a hungry void gaped. Niabi growled, positioning herself protectively before the group. The entity responded with a sound like glass shattering, advancing with unnatural, jerking movements. "It's newly formed," a Penniman observed. "Still learning to manipulate physical matter." "How do we stop it?" Dakota asked, his hands already shifting partially to claws in preparation for defense. "Conventional attacks are useless," Nanyehi warned. "It has no physical form to damage." Wakinyan stepped forward, drawing the silver knife he carried, Ea Ose, ceremonial blade passed through generations of Canyon Clan Alphas. "Not conventional, then." Before anyone could stop him, he drew the blade across his palm, letting his blood, Alpha blood, drip onto the floor between them and the entity. Speaking words in the ancient language that predated both Canyon and Northern dialects, he traced symbols in his blood that glowed with inner light. The entity shrieked, recoiling from the barrier his blood had created. "Blood of the physical realm repels that which has no right to material existence," a Penniman explained with approval. "Well remembered, Alpha." "It won't hold for long," Wakinyan replied, already moving toward the laboratory doors beyond. "We need to reach the source." The central laboratory revealed the full scope of what they faced. A massive device dominated the center of the room, a circular platform surrounded by specialized equipment that hummed with ominous energy. Above the platform, reality itself seemed to tear, creating a swirling vortex through which glimpses of the spirit realm were visible. Three scientists lay dead around the device, their bodies desiccated as if all moisture had been extracted. Others cowered in corners or behind equipment, their expressions vacant with terror or resignation, and standing before the machine, manipulating its controls with confident familiarity, was Elder Maka, the Canyon Clan traditionalist who had most vocally opposed the triad.
"You,"
Wakanyan growled, betrayal evident in his tone. "You've conspired with humans against your own kind." Maka turned slowly, his face a mask of righteous determination. "I've ensured our kind's survival, something your misguided unity would destroy." "By unleashing entities that consume life force?" Dakota challenged, incredulous. "By securing power that will make our clans untouchable," Maka countered. "These humans think they control this technology, but they are merely tools. Once the gateway is fully stabilized, we, the true guardians of the old ways, will command powers beyond imagination." Nanyehai stepped forward, sensing the dangerous distortion of the veil growing with each passing moment. "You're delusional, Maka. No one controls the spirit realm. It exists in balance with our world, not in servitude to it." The elder smiled coldly. "Your grandmother understood the potential. Why do you think she documented her techniques so meticulously? She simply lacked the courage to seize the power she studied, or the arrogance to believe she should," Nanyahi replied. "You've misinterpreted everything she stood for." Maka's attention shifted to something behind them. "But I haven't misinterpreted the true nature of power." They turned to find themselves surrounded by entities in various stages of manifestation. Some, nearly solid, others still transitioning from pure energy to semi-corporeal form. All radiated hunger and malevolence. "They obey me," Maka proclaimed with disturbing pride. "In exchange for passage into this realm, they serve my will." "Temporarily," Apeniman warned, "until they grow strong enough to break your control." "These are not spirits as you understand them, Elder. They are ancient hungers from the deepest layers of the other realm, entities that have never known physical form or moral constraint." Doubt flickered briefly across Maka's features before, resolving again into certainty. "You underestimate me, Guardian. I've bound them with blood rites more powerful than any you've witnessed." "Unwilling blood has limited power," Nanyahi countered, gesturing toward the dead scientists. "You've created a pact built on stolen life force. Such bonds shatter when tested." As if triggered by her words, the largest entity, a swirling mass of darkness shot through with crimson energy, surged forward, no longer circling obediently, but advancing directly toward Maka. "Return to your position," the elder commanded, raising his hand in a gesture clearly meant to enforce obedience. The entity hesitated momentarily, then continued its advance, followed by others breaking formation. "Now, while they're distracted," Wakanyan urged through the triad bond, "we need to reach the device." The three moved in perfect synchronization, Niabi and Apeniman providing cover as they circled toward the gateway machine. Maka, realizing his control was slipping, abandoned his position to intercept them. "Stop! You'll doom us all if you interfere with the calibration." "You've already done that," Dakota replied grimly. "We're just attempting to mitigate the damage." As they reached the machine, Nanyehi immediately recognized components scavenged from ancient artifacts, ceremonial items that had once belonged to dreamwalkers of previous generations, now rewired and corrupted to serve technological ends. "They've perverted sacred objects," she breathed, horror and anger mingling in her voice. "Can you shut it down?" Wakanyan asked, positioning himself protectively as the entities, having lost interest in Maka, began to circle the more powerful energy source the triad represented. Nanyehi studied the complex arrangement of technology and mysticism. "Not conventionally. The breach has been forced so wide that simply cutting power would cause catastrophic collapse, merging portions of both realms in chaotic convergence." "Then what options remain?" Dakota pressed, his senses alert to the increasing aggression of the entities surrounding them. Apeniman joined them, his ancient knowledge their most valuable resource. The letter from your grandmother mentioned a final step in the triad bond, one that could seal artificial passages permanently. Nanyehi nodded, the knowledge surfacing from deep within her ancestral memory. A willing sacrifice. Not of life, but of division. Speak plainly, Wakinyan urged as the entities drew closer, their hunger palpable in the charged air. The triad exists in balance. Three individuals sharing connection while maintaining separate identities, Nanyehi explained. The final step requires us to surrender those boundaries temporarily, becoming truly one consciousness capable of manipulating both realms simultaneously. Understanding dawned in both men's eyes, along with apprehension. What she proposed went beyond their existing bond into territory uncharted by any living shifter. The risk? Dakota asked, ever practical. If we cannot re-separate afterward, we remain a single consciousness forever, unable to function fully in either realm, Nanyehi admitted. A living gateway with no independent will. Maka, who had been listening, laughed bitterly. You see? Even your solution demands the very sacrifice you condemned me for taking from others. Power always requires blood. The difference, Wakinyan growled, is consent. We choose. Your victims did not. The largest entity suddenly lunged toward Maka, its form solidifying enough to grasp the elder with appendages that resembled claws. His scream cut through the laboratory as his life force began visibly transferring to the creature, glowing, energy pulled from his flesh into the entity's swirling mass. We're out of time, Apeniman warned, as the other entities, witnessing their companion's successful feeding, moved with more purposeful aggression. The triad exchanged glances. Their bond already conveying what words couldn't encompass, fear, determination, and acceptance. Together, then, Nanyehi said simply. They positioned themselves around the central platform, forming a triangle that mirrored the original bonding ceremony. Niabi moved to stand at the center, her massive form a conduit between realms. As the entities closed in, Nanyehi, Wakinyan, and Dakota joined hands, completing their circuit. The triad bond flared to life, not just the familiar connection they had grown accustomed to, but something deeper, more fundamental. Nanyehi spoke words that seemed to come from beyond her individual knowledge, an incantation older than language itself. The boundary between their separate minds began to dissolve, individual thoughts merging into a collective consciousness that expanded beyond physical limitations. Through their unified awareness, they perceived both realms simultaneously, the physical laboratory with its damaged humans and predatory entities, and the spirit world beyond the breach, where ancient powers stirred in response to their unprecedented unification. The guardian wolf howled, the sound vibrating between dimensions as she channeled their combined energy toward the artificial gateway. The machine beneath them groaned, components melting as power beyond its design capacity surged through its circuits. The entities shrieked in collective rage, sensing their pathway between worlds collapsing. They abandoned their separate victims to converge on the triad, desperate to prevent the closing of their access to the physical realm. From their unified consciousness came understanding and decisive action. Using techniques that none of them, individually possessed but together, could access, they created a counter vortex, a spinning energy field that began drawing the entities back toward their proper realm. Maka, partially drained but still conscious, crawled toward the machine's control panel. You fools, he gasped, blood trickling from his mouth. If you close the gateway now, the backlash will destroy everything within a mile radius. Apeniman intercepted him, his frail human appearance giving way to his true guardian form, a being of light and shadow combined. Your interference ends now, Elder. The entities fought against the pull of the counter-vortex, their partially physical, forms clawing desperately at the air, at equipment, at the few humans still alive, but the triad's unified power proved stronger, methodically drawing each manifestation back through the breach. Within the merged consciousness of the triad, a new awareness formed.
not just of the immediate threat, but of the underlying pattern that connected all realms. They could perceive the damage Nexus had inflicted on the natural order and the precise adjustments needed to restore balance. Working through Niobe, they began the complex process of healing the torn veil. Not simply closing the breach, but strengthening the natural boundary to resist future artificial penetration. The Guardian Wolf served as their instrument, her ancient connection to both worlds allowing precise manipulation of energies too dangerous for direct handling. As the last entity was drawn back into the spirit realm, the Triad focused their collective will on the final sealing. The vortex above the machine collapsed inward, reality knitting itself back together with an audible sound like a massive indrawn breath. A pulse of energy radiated outward from the closure point, washing over everyone in the facility. The humans affected by spirit touch began to stabilize, their transparency reversing as their life force rebalanced. In the aftermath of the sealing, the merged consciousness of the Triad faced its most difficult challenge, separation back into individual identities. The unified awareness was seductive in its power and completeness, making the return to limited perspective seem like an unnecessary diminishment. We could remain as one, the thought formed within their shared mind. Neither human, nor wolf, nor spirit, but something transcending all boundaries. The temptation was profound, to exist as a being of pure potential, unfettered by the limitations of physical form or separate identity. Yet within that unified consciousness, three distinct value systems still functioned. Wakinyan's dedication to his people's protection, Takoda's commitment to balanced progress, and Nanyahi's belief in personal choice. These core principles remained, even in merger. Our strength comes from our differences as much as our unity, the collective realized. To remain merged would eventually erode the very diversity that makes our bond powerful. With that understanding, they began the careful process of disentanglement, separating the threads of their consciousness while maintaining the strengthened bond that had always connected them. The return to individual perception was disorienting, like awakening from a dream more real than reality. Nanyahi gasped as her awareness contracted back to her physical body, the laboratory coming into sharp focus around her. Beside her, Wakinyan and Takoda similarly struggled to reorient themselves. "You succeeded," Apeniman stated simply, having resumed his elderly human appearance. "The breach is sealed." Niobe, exhausted from her role as conduit, lay panting. At the center of their triangle, her massive size diminished somewhat by the energy expenditure. "Not just sealed," Nanyahi managed, her voice hoarse. "Healed and protected against future tampering." Takoda surveyed the laboratory, where surviving humans were beginning to recover from their terror. "What about the research? Tala's journals?" "Destroyed in the energy pulse," Wakinyan confirmed, gesturing toward the smoking remains of computer servers and document storage. "The knowledge is safe." Maka lay unconscious but alive, his encounter with the entity having aged him visibly. His hair, previously salt and pepper, had turned completely white. "What happens to him?" Takoda asked, complicated emotions evident in his tone. Despite Maka's betrayal, clan justice traditionally emphasized rehabilitation over punishment. "He faces the council," Wakinyan decided. "All of it. His collaboration with humans, his manipulation of sacred artifacts, the lives lost to his ambition." "And these humans?" Nanyahi indicated the surviving scientists and security personnel, who watched them with varying degrees of fear and wonder. "They've witnessed too much to simply return to their former lives," Apeniman observed. "Yet killing them serves no purpose aligned with balance." Nanyahi approached the nearest scientist, a woman whose name badge identified her as Dr. Eleanor Chen. "Your work here was fundamentally misguided," she stated without preamble. "The boundaries between realms exist for essential reasons, not arbitrary limitations to be overcome." The scientist nodded shakily. We didn't understand. The entities weren't in any of our theoretical models." "Because you approached the spirit realm as a resource to be exploited, not a world with its own integrity and inhabitants, Takoda added, joining Nanyahi. Some knowledge isn't meant for technological application. What happens now? Dr. Chen asked, voicing the question. Foremost in all the survivors' minds, Wakinyan stepped forward, his natural authority evident even to humans unfamiliar with shifter hierarchy. Now you forget. Not by our action, but by your choice. What happened here can never be replicated or attempted again. And if we refuse? Another scientist challenged from across the room. Niabi rose to her feet, her massive form a reminder of powers beyond human comprehension. The message required no translation. As dawn approached, the triad supervised the secure shutdown of the facility. Kimi and his team had successfully contained the peripheral areas, ensuring no evidence of their true nature would remain for human authorities to discover. The cover story, a catastrophic experimental failure resulting in several deaths, would satisfy official investigations while discouraging similar research elsewhere. Maya met them at the extraction point, relief evident on her face. "It's done." Nanyehi nodded, exhaustion and accomplishment mingling in her expression. "The breach is sealed. Permanently." "And the journals?" "Returned to ash," Wakinyan confirmed. "Some knowledge should remain oral tradition only, passed to those, with wisdom to use it properly." As they journeyed back toward clan territory, Nanyehi reflected on the transformation they had undergone. Not just the temporary merger of consciousness, but the permanent deepening of their bond that had resulted. The final unsealing of the IE, Triad's potential had changed them individually and collectively. Wakinyan's rigid adherence to tradition had softened, balanced by newfound appreciation for adaptation. Takoda's progressive outlook was now tempered by deeper respect for the wisdom embedded in ancient practices. And Nanyehi had found the belonging she had always sought, not through submission to others' expectations, but through partnership that valued her unique contributions. 3 months later, the unified clan gathered beneath twin moons to formalize what had begun in crisis. Representatives from other shifter groups across the continent had come to witness the unprecedented restructuring of their oldest societies. The triad stood at the center of Council Rock, their bond now visible to all with the sight, a luminous energy that connected them while preserving their separate identities. "For generations, we defined ourselves by division," Nanyehi addressed. "The assembly," her voice carrying across the silent crowd. "Canyon and Northern. Traditional and progressive. Human and wolf. We believed strength came from purity of bloodline and purpose. We were wrong," Wakinyan continued, standing tall beside her. "Our future depends not on separation, but on conscious integration, choosing unity while honoring difference. Today marks not the end of our separate clans, but the beginning of their harmonious cooperation," Takoda completed their shared message. "The triad stands as living proof that diversity creates resilience when joined in common purpose." A Penniman stepped forward, his ancient status commanding respect from even the most skeptical traditionalists. "The veil between worlds is healed, but vigilance remains our eternal responsibility. No longer will this burden fall to isolated guardians or solitary dreamwalkers. Together, we maintain the balance that sustains all life." Hakath Homema, now co-leader of the Unified Council, alongside representatives from both former clans, raised his hands to the sky. "Let the ancestors witness our new covenant, not bound by blood alone, but by choice and vision." As the ceremonial drums began their rhythmic heartbeat, Nanyehi gazed across the gathered clans, former enemies now cautious allies, traditionalists and progressives finding common ground. Humans like Maya accepted as valued friends rather than threats. The path ahead would not be without challenges. Centuries of separation could not be undone in months or even years. But the foundation had been laid for a future where diversity strengthened rather than divided, where balance came, through integration rather than isolation. The guardian wolf, restored to her full power, howled a song that resonated between worlds, a message carried to ancestors watching from the spirit realm. The ancient prophecy had been fulfilled, not as an ending, but as a beginning. Beneath twin moons, a new era dawned for beings who walked between worlds. Their strength found not in purity, but in connection. Not in dominance, but in harmony. Not in resistance to change, but in transcendence through it. Renewal.